All right, so get this. A New Jersey minister starts holding these small church services, right, in his home after the usual spot closed down. Seems harmless enough, right?
Well, yeah, Robert Cameron thought so too.
Okay.
But this seemingly simple act actually landed him in a legal battle that went all the way to the New Jersey Supreme Court in the case of State v. Cameron.
Exactly. And that's what we're going to be unpacking today. This really fascinating clash between zoning laws, freedom of religion, and what it means to define a church.
Mm-hmm.
We've got court opinions, legal analyses, some historical context, the whole nine yards.
Yeah. It all started when Cameron, the minister of the Mount Carmel Reformed Episcopal Church, started holding these services at his home. It's important to note this wasn't like, you know, some megachurch situation or anything.
Right.
We're talking about a relatively small congregation, about 25 people gathering for an hour each week.
And they were only doing this temporarily while they searched for a new permanent location. Seems like a reasonable solution to a very common problem,
yeah.
You'd think.
You'd think so, yeah. But here's where things get kind of interesting. Cameron's home was in an R15 zone in Franklin Township, New Jersey. This type of zoning is, you know, pretty common. Basically just an area for single family homes only.
Okay, so no corner stores, no car washes.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing churches are a no-go.
You got it. And to make things even more complicated, the township's zoning ordinances specifically stated that churches and similar places of worship were excluded from R15 zones, although they were permitted in other residential zones.
Okay, so right off the bat, we have a potential conflict. Okay. Holding a church service in his home, even if it's just temporary, puts Cameron at odds with his zoning law.
Mm-hmm.
But was it really that simple? I mean, is a home that's being used temporarily for worship really a church in the eyes of the law? That seems like a pretty crucial question here.
Yeah, it is. And that's precisely what the courts had to grapple with. You see, things kind of escalated when Cameron's neighbors started lodging complaints about the services, specifically noise and parking issues.
Classic neighborly disputes, though I have to admit, I'm picturing a very different scene than, you know, like a raucous party disturbing the peace.
Right, exactly. But these complaints triggered action from the township. And they ended up charging Cameron with violating the zoning ordinance, fined him $500, and ordered him to, you know, just stop the services at his home.
Wow. So this seemingly simple act of worship turned into a full-blown legal showdown. What was Cameron's response to all of this?
Well, he challenged the charges, arguing that the ordinance was unclear, especially when it came to, you know, like the temporary use of a home for religious purposes.
So his defense was essentially, hey, my home's not a church in the traditional sense.
Exactly. And this argument gained traction.
Okay.
While lower courts initially upheld the violation, the case ultimately made its way to the New Jersey Supreme Court.
Okay, so now we're in the big leagues. The highest court in the state is now weighing in on a case that involves zoning, religious freedom, even the very definition of a church. What were the main issues at stake here?
Yeah, the stakes were very high. The court had to consider this crucial question. Was the ordinance unconstitutionally vague?
Yeah.
In other words, you know, could a person of ordinary intelligence reasonably understand that holding these small, infrequent services in their home would be a violation? This gets into the legal concept of the vagueness doctrine.
Now, for those of us who aren't legal scholars, break down this vagueness doctrine for us. What does that mean in plain English?
Well, essentially, it means that laws have to be clear enough to, you know, guide people's behavior and prevent arbitrary or discriminatory enforcement. If a law is too vague, it can be challenged on the grounds that it violates the 14th Amendment's due process clause, which is, you know, the right to fair treatment under the law.
And in this case, we also have to consider some pretty big First Amendment implications. We're talking freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, all potentially at play here when the government is restricting these religious gatherings.
Absolutely. State v. Cameron becomes much more than just a zoning dispute at this point. It's about this, you know, balancing act between the government's power to regulate land use with the fundamental right to freely exercise one's religion. You know, it's a classic constitutional dilemma.
So the stage is set for this really fascinating legal showdown. We have this seemingly straightforward situation. A minister holding services in his home. And that spiraled into a case with some huge implications for religious freedom and the power of local governments. What was the Supreme Court's decision in this landmark case? Did they side with Cameron's right to hold these services? Or did they uphold the township's ordinance?
Yeah, that's what we'll unpack next. The court's decision was far from simple. There are a lot of nuanced arguments, even a few surprises along the way. buckle up, because this legal deep dive is about to get even more interesting. So the majority opinion written by Justice Handler ultimately sided with Cameron.
Interesting. So they found that the zoning ordinance was, in fact, too vague to be applied in this case.
Yeah.
What specifically did they like about it?
Well, they really honed in on the language that we talked about earlier, churches and similar places of worship.
Right.
The court argued that this phrase lacked the clarity needed to, you know, really determine if it applied to a home temporarily being used for services.
So the court was essentially saying, look, churches are generally understood to be dedicated structures, not someone's living room, you know, on a Sunday morning.
That's a great way to put it.
Right.
They drew a clear distinction between, you know, a dedicated building specifically for religious purposes and a home that's serving that function on a, you know, temporary basis. Their argument was that a person of ordinary intelligence wouldn't necessarily connect the ordinance to Cameron's situation.
Right. And as we discussed earlier, the vagueness doctrine is all about making sure laws are clear enough for the average person to understand. So the court seems to be saying that this particular ordinance just didn't pass that test.
Exactly. And they took it a step further, emphasizing that laws with penalties like fines or jail time require an even higher degree of clarity, especially when dealing with those fundamental rights like freedom of religion.
So the $500 fine against Cameron actually worked against the township in this case.
You could say that.
Interesting.
Yeah, the court really emphasized that when the possibility of criminal sanctions exists, the law has to be crystal clear to avoid any chance of arbitrary or unfair enforcement.
It's fascinating to me how all these different legal concepts, zoning, vagueness, freedom of religion, they all kind of come together in this one case.
Yeah, it really shows how interconnected our legal system is.
Right.
And Justice Handler summed it up pretty well in his opinion, writing that the ordinance fails to provide adequate warning and risks arbitrary enforcement.
That's a pretty strong statement.
Yeah.
It suggests that the court was really worried about the potential for this kind of vague language to be used to infringe on people's rights, even in seemingly mundane situations.
Absolutely. But as with most Supreme Court cases, there were other viewpoints. Justice Garibaldi, for example, penned a dissenting opinion, arguing that the ordinance was clear enough.
Okay, so we have a dissenting voice. What was Justice Garibaldi's take on this situation?
His argument was, you know, when a home is used regularly for organized worship led by a minister, it essentially transforms that home into a church, as far as the law is concerned.
So he's saying that because Cameron held these services every week, you know, with a designated leader and structure, it wasn't just informal private prayer. It was more akin to a traditional church service, regardless of the location.
Precisely. And Justice Garibaldi felt this interpretation was in line with how most people would understand the ordinance. It's a perspective that many people might agree with, a sort of common sense approach to the law.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, even if the dissenting view didn't win out in this case, it does highlight that there can be genuine differences in how people interpret language, even in something as seemingly formal as legal documents.
Yeah, that definitely underscores the complexity of legal interpretation.
For sure.
And just when you thought we'd covered all the bases, there's another layer to this case, a concurring opinion written by Justice Clifford.
Oh, this is getting even more intricate. What did Justice Clifford bring to the table? Was he siding with the majority or the dissent?
Well, his opinion actually agreed with the majority's decision to overturn Cameron's conviction.
Okay.
However, he went a step further, arguing that towns and cities simply cannot ban private religious observances in homes, regardless of how clear their zoning ordinances might be.
Wow, that's a pretty bold statement.
Yeah.
So even if the town had drafted a perfectly clear ordinance that explicitly banned religious services in homes, Justice Clifford would still have sided with Cameron.
That's correct. He took a much broader constitutional stance.
Yeah.
Emphasizing that the First Amendment, along with the right to privacy, protects the right of individuals to engage in religious activities, you know, within their own homes, free from government interference.
This raises a really fascinating point about the sanctity of the home as this protected space.
Right.
It's almost like Justice Clifford was drawing a line in the sand and saying the government can't dictate what people do in the privacy of their own homes, especially when it comes to religious expression.
Exactly. He saw this case as touching on those fundamental principles of individual liberty and the protection of personal beliefs. He even used the phrase kitchen table worship to illustrate his point.
Kitchen table worship, that really paints a picture, doesn't it?
It does.
So we have a majority opinion focused on the vagueness of the ordinance, a dissenting opinion pushing for a more literal interpretation, and then this concurring opinion that takes it even further, asserting this broader right to religious freedom in the home. It's amazing how one case can generate such a range of legal opinions.
Yeah, it really highlights the dynamic nature of our legal processes.
Right.
But it also emphasizes the importance of legal precedent in shaping how these issues are interpreted and applied, you know, moving forward.
Which leads us perfectly to the next part of our deep dive, exploring the legal context surrounding State v. Cameron. How does this case fit into the bigger picture of legal decisions related to vagueness, zoning, and religious freedom? What were some of the cases that came before that helped shape the legal landscape leading up to this decision? So let's delve into those legal precedents a little bit.
Hmm.
What are some of the key cases that kind of help us understand the legal landscape surrounding State v. Cameron? You mentioned that this case didn't like appear out of nowhere.
Right. State v. Cameron is, you know, part of this long line of cases that grappled with this balance between government regulation and individual rights. And one landmark case that's often cited when discussing vagueness is Grain v. City of Rockford, a 1972 case that went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Okay, Grain, yeah, that rings a bell. It involved a noise ordinance near a school, right?
Yes. The court in Grain struck down that ordinance because it was so vague. You know, it could be used to punish all sorts of protected speech. Essentially, it had this, you know, chilling effect on free expression. And that concern about chilling constitutional rights is really at the heart of the vagueness doctrine.
So Grain kind of set the stage for cases like State v. Cameron. It established that laws must be clear enough that they don't accidentally, you know, sweep in activities that are constitutionally protected.
Exactly. And then there's another legal principle that's really important here, known as the Leshinsky standard from the case, State v. Leshinsky.
Leshinsky, okay. Refresh my memory on that one. What does that standard say?
Well, the Leshinsky standard essentially states that laws must be understandable based on ordinary experience. In other words, you shouldn't need a law degree to figure out what a law means. The average person should be able to read it and understand what's prohibited.
Right. That makes sense. You can't expect everyone to be a constitutional law expert. Mm-hmm. Laws need to be clear and easy to understand, you know, for everyone.
Precisely. And the Leshinsky standard becomes even more critical when we're talking about laws that, you know, carry criminal penalties. As we've discussed, that possibility of fines or jail time really raises the stakes when it comes to clarity and fairness.
Right. The court in State v. Cameron really seemed to emphasize that point, especially in light of the fine that was levied against Cameron. And you mentioned another case earlier that dealt with this issue of penalties, something about a tobacconist.
Yes, Pound Tobacconist v. Kimmelman. This was a New Jersey Supreme Court case that involved a law regulating cigarette sales. But it established a key principle that's really relevant to State v. Cameron. Essentially, it found that penal laws are subject to even stricter scrutiny when it comes to vagueness.
So if a law can lead to punishment, the courts are going to demand an even higher level of clarity. It's all about protecting individual rights and ensuring fairness.
Absolutely. And all of these cases taken together create this rich legal context for understanding State v. Cameron. They show us that courts have consistently tried to balance government power with individual liberties, particularly when dealing with those fundamental rights like freedom of speech and religion.
Yeah, it sounds like State v. Cameron builds upon those earlier decisions, drawing on the principles established in cases like Grain, Leshinsky, and Town Tobacconist.
That's a great way to put it. And by looking at these precedents, we gain a much deeper understanding of the court's reasoning in State v. Cameron and how it might influence future cases dealing with zoning, vagueness, and religious freedom.
So what are the long-term implications of State v. Cameron? What does it mean for towns and cities, for lawyers, and for the overall legal landscape when it comes to these issues?
Well, for municipalities, I think this case serves as a bit of a cautionary tale. It highlights the importance of...
So no more vague phrases like churches and similar places of worship.
Right. Towns and cities need to be much more specific. You know, clearly defined terms outline exactly what activities are permitted and where. They need to make sure their ordinances are easily understood by the average person and that they don't unintentionally infringe on fundamental rights.
So it sounds like a call for clarity and precision in, you know, legal drafting.
Exactly. And for lawyers, State v. Cameron provides a really powerful tool for challenging vague ordinances that restrict religious or home-based activities.
So if a lawyer is representing someone who's facing a zoning violation that's similar to Cameron's, they can point to this case and say, hey, look, This ordinance is unconstitutionally vague. It infringes on my client's rights.
Precisely. State v. Cameron gives lawyers a strong argument, particularly when dealing with laws that are impacting those, you know, sensitive areas like religious practice or the sanctity of the home.
It's amazing how one case can have such a ripple effect throughout, like, the whole legal system. What about the broader implications? How does State v. Cameron fit into the bigger trends in legal thinking around religious freedom and zoning?
Well, some legal scholars see this case as part of this growing trend of judicial skepticism towards laws that burden what are called intimate religious practices.
Okay. Intimate religious practices. What does that mean exactly?
It refers to those religious activities that take place in smaller, more private settings, often within the home. Think, small prayer groups, Bible studies, or in Cameron's case, a small congregation gathering for worship.
And you're saying that courts are becoming more and more hesitant to allow the government to regulate these types of activities.
That's right. There's this increasing recognition that the home has this special significance when it comes to religious freedom. It's viewed as a kind of sanctuary where individuals should be free to practice their beliefs without, unnecessary government intrusion.
And this trend has likely been amplified by the COVID-19 pandemic, right?
Oh, absolutely.
With so many people forced to worship from home, that idea of the home as this sacred space has probably taken on even greater weight.
Yeah, the pandemic really highlighted the importance of protecting religious practice in the home. And while State v. Cameron was decided well before the pandemic, it definitely aligns with this broader shift in legal thinking.
It's fascinating how real-world events can shape these legal interpretations and influence the course of precedent. So as we wrap up our deep dive into State v. Cameron, what are some key takeaways for our listeners?
Well, I think this case underscores the vital importance of clarity in the law. Vague laws create confusion. And, they open the door to unfair or discriminatory enforcement, potentially violating constitutional rights.
It's a good reminder that the law should be accessible to everyone, not just lawyers and judges.
Right. And secondly, I think State v. Cameron really highlights that tension that exists between government power and individual liberty. Zoning laws are, important for orderly development, but they can't be used to suppress those fundamental rights, especially when it comes to freedom of religion and the sanctity of the home.
It's a delicate balancing act.
Mm.
And, this case gives us some valuable guidance for navigating that complexity. Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I think State v. Cameron encourages us to think critically about how the law evolves. As societal norms and values change, legal interpretations must also adapt. It's a reminder that the law is this living thing, constantly shaped by these new challenges and interpretations.
Well said. State v. Cameron may have been decided decades ago, but it clearly still resonates today, forcing us to confront what it means to define a church, where the boundaries of religious freedom lie, and how we balance individual rights with the need for order in our communities. It's a case that definitely leaves us with more questions than answers.
It does, and I think that's what makes it such a thought-provoking and enduring case.
Absolutely. It reminds us that the law isn't just about rules and regulations. It's about fundamental values and that ongoing struggle to create a more just and equitable society.
Well put.
Well, thanks for joining me on this deep dive. It's been a fascinating look at zoning laws, religious freedom, and that lasting impact of legal precedent.
It's been a pleasure.